So let me first outline what's in this talk. So it's about searches and the substructure techniques used in there. And I will constrain to two searches only, the ones which use the substructure techniques with the mask cut and the mask swap cut. There's other analysis which simply cut on the jet mask, but I'm concentrating on the two. I'm not going to give this nice historical introduction like we had for Atlas, just concentrate on these analysis and give all as much as details as possible. So first, starting just two slides on how these searches work, then go into detail on the jet reconstruction and WZ tagging, top tagging involved, and then go to background estimation procedure, how to simulate the signal and the search results. And finally, give some outlook and some discussion topics, which was to a large extent already covered yesterday, just mentioning what I had in mind as well. So these are the two searches. First is the search in digits with WZ tagging. So that's looking for resonances, which decay into something like a quark plus a W or Z, which is decaying fully hadronically, so that one can tag it with substructure. And the other one is a resonance going to W or Z's pairs, also fully hadronic. Of course, there's a corresponding semileptonic and with a lower boost analysis to it, but this is the analysis at very high boost and fully hadronic. Then the second analysis, the hadronic GT bar search, which uses W and top tagging, two signatures, one where both tops are fully boosted and fully merged into a jet, and the other where one top is completely merged and the other is partially merged, where the W is merged and the B jet is still separated. So that's the two analysis. Now, what's the strategy for the WZ tag search? So signatures are basically benchmark model for a model independent bump hunt. So it's basically a bump hunt, but you need some benchmarks to actually check what is the performance. And there's an RS graviton going to WW or ZZ. And of course, you can search for such a graviton resonance also in simple digets, where you have not the W's in the final state, but there are phenomenological models which prefer the decay into W's and Z's. So that's why these final states are particularly interesting. Then a W prime for this WZ final state and a excited quark going to QWQZ. So the main point of what you have to achieve in the search is reduce the QCD background. And there's two techniques which are used. So first of all, just using the angular distribution of digets, cutting on a delta eta of the jets, and that's reducing the QCD, which looks more like a T-channel-like angular distribution, while the resonance we look for are S-channel resonances. So that's one way to get rid of QCD, and the other is the WZ tagging. Background is estimated just from a smooth, assuming that the data can be described by a smooth function and fitting signal and background at the same time. And this is how the spectra looks like. So what we look in is the digit mass spectrum, where both of these jets, or where either one or both of these jets are tagged with as a W. And then the data is fitted with a smooth four or three parameter function, and one searches for resonances on top of this. And one searches for QW or QZ resonances in the single tag spectrum, and for the WW, WZ, and ZZ in this double tag spectrum. So that's the first analysis. And then the other one is the hadronic GT bar search. Here, here's just a list of motivation for this, for why I search something in hadronic GT bar. And it's again meant as a module independent search for any kind of bump or enhancement on this GT bar spectrum. And there's a few benchmark scenarios with different widths. A very narrow width, Z prime, which has a smaller resolution than the smaller width than the detector resolution, an intermediate width similar already to the detector resolution, and a wider width, KK gluon. And the background here is reduced, the QCD background, by this by W and Z tagging, W and top tagging, sorry. Yeah, and so this is the two spectra. One is where one top is fully merged, the other where one top, where only the W has merged and the B is still separated. And this is where both tops have merged into one jet. Yeah, and then the search is, there's first the bump hunt searching on this, and the second is looking for an enhancement, basically quantifying how many number times standard model the ddbar cross section could be in this above a certain threshold. I would explain this a bit later. And yeah, different to the previous analysis, the background estimate. So here it's actually estimated from a sideband region, not by a simple fit. Okay. Now moving to the jet reconstruction. So I put a bit more detailed numbers here since we were talking about this already yesterday, where one was wondering, like, if you propose a new variable, does it have to react work also for coarse kilometer cells? And I think for CMS, it should be working as the same as on the particle level in principle, because what we do to reconstruct our jets, we always start from the tracks. And of course, you can exactly measure their direction and the PT. And then they are matched to the also finely grained calorimeter with a 0.01 width. And also there, you can already measure the direction of the particles very precisely. And what you do is basically you see if the momentum from the track and the calorimeter deposit agree within the resolution. If yes, it's one particle. If no, then assign the rest as a new particle. So, and that's the same as happening for the H-cal. You can figure out if it's the same particle or there must be another pi zero, for example. Yeah, and then this is how for a 100 GeV jet, the composition of a jet in terms of particles look like. So 60% of the jet is charged pions or charged particles, charged hadronic particles. So for these, you basically have the track momentum to measure the position and the energy. Then there's another 20% of photons where you have the ECAL to precisely measure the position and the energy. And then only there's a small 10% fraction of neutral hadrons, where you really rely on the hadronic calorimeter to actually measure energy and position. So, yeah, this is basically the fraction where you don't know from which vertex it's coming and where you have the worst resolution. Yeah. Default clustering algorithm in CMS is 0.5 and 0.7 anti-KT jets, but for the jets cluster, substructure analysis, there's other algorithms as well. Here's how the performance of this jet reconstruction is. So energy scale uncertainties of order of 1 to 2% if you go to high PT jets, which are interesting for this analysis. Calibration versus ITER is better than 1% per unit of pseudorapidity. Energy resolution is about 10% or better for 100 GeV jets. And position resolution 0.01. And the trigger efficiency, yeah, there's always a jet trigger. Above the jet trigger threshold, you typically get like 99% efficiency. Okay, now a bit more detail. So, because we don't only use the jet 4 vector, but actually all the particles which are in there. So, to let you know how these numbers compare. So, the single particle response for pions, it's typically calibrated to a percent level precision, and that means when we calculate jet energy correction, that's only a few percent which we apply in the end on the jet. Just taking the particles is already at percent level, and then we apply a few percent to get the corrected jet energy. And charged particles which do not come from the primary vertex, we can reject them from the jet reconstruction. Then we have a jet-by-jet correction, since we still have some neutral particles from pileup based on the jet area and the event energy density, a la this recipe. And now saying what actually do we do when we get to substructure of jets. There, the variables, say the mass drop in this case, it's actually taken directly from the single particles which enter the jet reconstruction. So there, this correction doesn't go. So instead of calibrating from the first principles, these guys, or they are already very well calibrated indeed. At the analysis level, we check the energy scale of this and have a data Monte Carlo scale factor, which we measured in semi-leptonic TD bar. And that's, I'm going to show a bit later how this scale factor works. Yeah. So basically, this is what we currently do. And the ways to improve this, first thing is, of course, get this single particle response even better calibrated, so you have to correct even less. But then I think the next crucial thing is to actually have a pileup correction for jet shape variables, according like in the recipe. I hope Gavin will tell a bit more about it. Yeah. Yeah. Because in the end, okay, if you check in the analysis, how large is the uncertainty due to pileup? It's usually not very big, but still, if there's any kind of mismodeling of the pileup, say the minimum bias Monte Carlo or whatever we use for that, reducing the pileup dependence always helps to reduce whatever data Monte Carlo disagreement there could be. So I think reducing the pileup dependence even more is still very important. Okay. Yeah, jump in whenever you want to ask something. So boosted hadronic W tagging, you probably know all the algorithm. So we use Cambridge Aachen 0.8 jets, pruning, and this gives a nice separation in the jet mass between signal and QCD. The actual tagging is then a jet mass cut. It's different for the two analyses depending on how tight or how much QCD background we actually need to reject, so that's optimized for each signal. And then we use this mass drop by unclustering the last step and find two subjects. Also, the cut value for this is depends on the analysis, how much background you need to reject. Okay, now how do we validate this? So we go to semi-leptonic TT bar events where you can reconstruct the leptonic top on one side, and then look at the candidate for the hadronic W jet on the other side. And there you can actually then see on the combinatorial background of the QCD, of the TT bar, you can see the W peak from merged Ws. And in this, you can measure both is the jet mass very well calibrated, and you can get a data Monte Carlo scale factor. And then the second thing is you can measure is the efficiency of tagging correctly modeled. So basically apply the cuts on these distributions and see if this data in Monte Carlo describes the fractions passing and failing correctly.
Wait, so yes. You asked us to stop you.
Yeah.
You're going to get me wrong. So you have a 1% uncertainty on your mass scale here, effectively, then, the W's.
That's the statistical only, though.
Okay, so you also include some systematics as well.
Yes, I'm not sure exactly what is the number, but, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I thought that, yeah.
Yeah, actually, the jet energy scale uncertainty is composed a bit more, with a bit more uncertainties, which I'm going to talk about a bit more, but just telling you now, it's the jet energy scale uncertainty, which is 1 to 2%, plus an uncertainty because we don't use the exact same algorithm for the substructure and where we actually calibrate the jets to the best precision. Yeah. And yeah, so in this case, Matweb and Prisia seem to describe this very well. Yeah, but that's just one generator. So. Now the question is, so we validate this in the in the regime where the where the W's from the tops merge into one jet. So if you imagine, so this is the jet PT, this is the jet mass. So in the intermediate region, you get the W merge, but when you go to higher PT, the top merges completely. This, of course, depends on the choice of your cone. And, yes. You mean this? Where these plots are? Right? It's a semi-leptonic TD bar event, where you reconstruct the leptonic top completely, and then you have two jets on the other side, a B and a W candidate. And yeah, so the next question is: if you're going to search at high PT for boosted Ws, does this scale factor or this validation in the TD bar sample hold? And well, the best you can do is look at this for higher PT jets. So here is there's a certain cut applied on the PT of W and B. Actually, okay, this doesn't exactly correspond to this plot. But yeah, then of course you start suffering from statistics. You can only check, okay, does it still work more or less? But the problem is once you go to higher PT jets, it's not W's anymore which merge, but then actually the top starts to merge. So the window in which you can validate the W tagging is actually kind of small, only up to some hundred GeV.
Can't you just reduce your jet radius when you go to higher PT? I mean, if you're tagging W's at high PT, then having a really big cone doesn't help you with that either.
Yeah, so you could, yeah, that's kind of a good question. Yeah, you could divide up the search in different reasons. Okay, but then the problem is this is 0.8. Okay, but again, also if you do this, say, with a cone size of 0.6, the problem is you run out of TD bar statistics. It's, yeah, that's a problem then. Yeah, it's obviously is the right idea, but then you're kind of limited to a certain region where you can actually test something, where you have TD bar events. Yeah, so of course, so you cannot go much higher in PT for checking this, but thinking about the future already, of course, the perfect standard candle in the future is the semi-leptonic WW sample where you have boost Ws. But looking at it right now, it doesn't seem like there's enough WWs on top of the background, which you could actually use to get a precise estimate of the W tagging efficiency. So that's a very nice thing, but I think it's not going to be this year, but we can keep trying, of course. Okay, so now going to the another part of validation, so jet substructure in QCD background. So these are the variables, the jet mass and the mass drop. The points are the data in diejets without tagging, and Herwig and Prisia leading order generator predictions are overlaid. And you can see one is doing better than the other. So there is one generator which can describe it. That was like the criteria if you want to say this, if this is well understood. But anyway, for the analysis, this doesn't matter because we estimate the QCD background from data in the end. But nevertheless, I think there's something we can learn about this, and that's how do we describe the PT dependence of the jet substructure in QCD Monte Carlo. So I hope this is kind of a validation of how good the PT dependence of the showering works. So if you then look at, this is the tagging efficiency, this is here for signal, and this is the missed tag rate for background, for digit events, and here for double tagging and double tagging on the background. And so if you compare here the data with the QCD Monte Carlo prediction, you can see that this trend is more or less described. So yeah, of course there's a difference between the Monte Carlos, but this is the most confidence we can have about how well W tagging should work, or the showering should describe the signal in the signal Monte Carlo at high PT. So that's the best hint we have right now. Here you can also see like how much we gain on the signal compared to the background, like a factor 150 for the W tagged digest. So that was all on the W tagging. Do you have anything to discuss on this?
I feel like I should know the answer if you go back just a couple of slides. The this on the top right plot. What tags are already applied to make this?
This is just kinematic, and then.
So it's without the mass drop.
It's without when the second plot is evaluated, the first is already applied.
Right.
But I'm not exactly sure which order it was here. I think here, first the mass and then the mass drop, or
okay.
Maybe the other way around. So
okay. Yeah,
have to check that. Now coming to the top tagging, so this is the CMS top tagger which we have. It's also based on the same jet collection with pruning. You use the Yarn cluster 3 subjets, get the top mass estimate and the W mass, which is the minimum pairwise subjet mass, and then have cuts on these. That's very similar to the W tagging algorithm in the end. This is just about how we name these stuff in this analysis. So a top completely merged is called type 1. A partially merged top is called type 2. And these are the two categories in which the search is performed. And these are the corresponding cuts. So this is now starting to tell about the background estimate for the TT-bar search also. So this is the signal efficiency and the mistag rate for the top tagger. The signal efficiency is estimated from Monte Carlo with the scale factor, which we derived actually in this W sum on the W. The mistag probability here, this is estimated from data in a signal depleted region in a sideband which has TT bar like kinematic. So that's you tag one side of the top with a type 2. And but you do invert the mass drop requirement to be orthogonal or to reject or to be a signal depleted. And then probe the other side jet, which should be a type 1 jet. So this is the procedure for the mistag rate. And this is just an example display. We've seen many beautiful events like this before. So now one detail about the actual jet cones, which we use. So in CMS, we have well-calibrated jets for anti-KT5 and anti-KT7. So that's done centrally for everybody. And they're obviously based on anti-KT due to the cone shape. Row computation jets for adding what jet algorithms are used at all in CMS. So that's a KT6, but that actually doesn't really matter what's used for this. And yeah. Sorry?
Maybe a bit large.
Maybe a little large, okay.
Well, we did an optimization for this for Atlas where we scanned from, I think, 0.2 to 0.6, and I think that we found that 0.4 worked.
0.4. Okay, that's
nice. I think 0.3 and 0.4 were about similar.
Mm. And the difference is because the events are less busy at CMS with its own neutral component. That cannot affect optimization. Still, 0.6, you run the risk of being a bit sort of biased by this hard, too many hard jets around.
Do you mean it's only the neutral? Oh, because
there's no charge by that.
Then, for the substructure taggers, we base everything on CA8. Basically, because we want to uncluster to get subjects, and that's IK doesn't work obviously for this. One could nowadays also do first anti-KT clustering and CA unclustering, but I don't know if there's any gain from that. And the 0.8, yeah, it's actually the radius where we have merged W sample in the TT bar. So if it would be a larger radius, it would mainly yield boosted tops and we couldn't validate the W's. If it were a smaller radius, it would yield a lot of merged W's, but only little statistics. Yeah. So that's kind of an intermediate radius. And then there's a bit different philosophies in the two searches. So both in the Hadronic GT-bar search, everything is done with the Cambridge Aachen 8, both the tagging and the reconstruction of the top kinematics and everything. And then that's the small difference between the calibration for the for one of the main collections and the one which was actually used is taken into account as systematic uncertainty. And as you as I said, this correction is usually of the order of a few percent.
How's
so that,
value?
Sorry?
How's this difference
value? That I don't remember exactly. I think on Monte Carlo.
Monte Carlo,
I think so, yes.
Do you really use the energy of the CA jet and apply the data from the parallel constant from Monte Carlo 0.5?
Yeah, that's on the 70 EV analysis. In 80 EV, that may be much more problematic because you have much more pileup. So that's going to be different in the in ATV, for sure. Yes.
So why use the FTP5 instead of, for example, the FTP7?
Because at that time, that's like 2 years ago, we didn't have the 7 yet, or the calibration for the 7 yet. Yeah. So that's. Yeah. That's just giving you as much details as possible.
Yes.
So for the W tag digesters, this is done differently. So to reconstruct the diget spectrum here, we use the anti-KT5, and that's possible because all the W's are they mostly already merged completely at what the region where we search for that starts at 1 TeV resonance mass. And the tagging is based on the Cambridge Aachen H because we do this validation in the TT bar sample. And as I mentioned, this kind of radius is the only way we can do this very well. Mm-hmm. So that's this kind of combination.
So here you match.
And then there's
collections, and you say, I take a tag from this collection.
Yes.
Is that
so it's. So we check that they practically always match. And then this is possible. If this weren't the case, then it would be a very complicated procedure.
For the diget spectrum, you generally actually have digets, and the sex, you don't super high multiplicity events. I think that this is, every once in a while you should see an additional anti-KT 0.5.
Right.
And then what do you do?
We take the first two jets and check that they match with the CAA jets. Yeah, but this is a difficult question to answer, of course.
I have a dumb question. So this actually goes back several slides. You don't have to go, but you showed that the one tag reduces, has an efficiency of 10% or.
That's a two tag. So let me show you. Let give you the numbers. Oop. So that's a 35% efficiency for the single tag.
Yeah.
And once you apply it twice, you have something like a 10% efficiency.
Okay, sorry. What is the data comparison?
So that's digit data, background.
Okay.
So that's a mistag rate.
Okay.
So moving to the background estimation, so everything is based on data, not on the QCD Monte Carlo. In this WDetect search, we rely on that the background can be fitted by a smooth function. and then fit signal and background simultaneously in the statistical analysis. And then the background uncertainties are variations of this kind of fit functions. So that's the one approach. So there you basically don't rely on any fake rate, anything like that. And the other approach is to estimate the background by applying this top mistag probability, which I showed you just two slides before, to a single depleted region. And the single depleted region is here defined as events where only one of the two tops is top tagged. And as you can imagine, this goes back to the discussion of J. So that's basically you have two jets and you get this mistag probability one of them, but apply them to both of them. So and this actually does introduce a small bias in the jet mass distribution, because here we require basically that one of the tops shouldn't be tagged, and so the jet mass distribution of both of them will be slightly different. And therefore, you have to adjust the jet mass distribution to those expected, what we do in QCD Monte Carlo. And then that procedure, of course, has to be validated, both that it closes on Monte Carlo, but also that it describes the data distributions. So,
can you explain what, it's interesting, I didn't realize that this was part of it. What do you mean adjust the jet mass distribution?
So basically randomly draw it. You basically randomly draw the jet mass distribution from the Monte Carlo,
okay,
instead of taking that from the control region where you get the kinematics from.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's a procedure, and you need to do something like this, because you want to have no signal contamination in your in the region where you get the background estimate from. Mm-hmm. And that's why there's this not tag requirement. Yeah. Maybe we can discuss the alternative right now. Or do you want to tell what the Atlas version of this?
I think Sebastian is going to talk about it in the session.
I can give
a brief summary. Okay. So we have the advantage in the Atlas analysis that we use top tagging and B tagging. So therefore, we can estimate the background in the two top tag, two B tag region, which is the signal region, from the region with two top tags and one B tag. And since we estimate from one region with two top tags into another region with two top tags, the kinematic doesn't change. And we also saw that we can't estimate from the region with one top tag into the region with two top tags, as you see. So
yeah, and but in this procedure, so then you have to make sure that in the anti-B tag region you have no signal contamination, right?
It's small enough.
Yeah, it's small enough. Yeah, that's then always the check one has to be doing. Yeah. So this kind of goes into the direction of the J's proposal, what to do with these kind of kinematics. Now about signal simulation. So what's the situation with how we simulate the signals? So we have, for this search, we have the signal Monte Carlo simulated for the graviton with Herwig +++ as a main and Prisia as a cross-check, and the Q star and the W prime with Prisia. In the hadronic QR, we have the Z prime simulated with Matgraph with Prisia and the KK gluon with Prisia 8. It's kind of a mess because wherever you have the signal available. So you can measure in the Matgraph plus Prisia, this is where we measured the scale factor for the W tagging. But when you have different denigrators, what do you do? So in the end, what we do observe, you already saw that the distributions are different for the background, but also for the signal, for the Ws with shower, you do see a difference in the tagging efficiency modeling in Prisia and Herwig. And this is order of 10%. And this is due to different showering and hadronization. It's hard to disentangle the two. It's probably the showering, but if you go to the grand generator and switch off one of them, then it doesn't give reasonable results anymore. So currently this is taken into account as a systematic uncertainty, and I think we don't believe to know the WZ tagging modeling the showering better than this kind of order. And so in the future that could only be reduced by tuning or having a procedure to actually correct the jet substructure description in the Monte Carlo. And that there I went on a long discussion already yesterday how to do that. And I think the main way was to actually measure the observables completely in the experiment and then tune the Monte Carlo to that and then come back 3 years later and actually have it. But the problem is what we raised yesterday was the motivation to actually do this, because we're talking about a search where we want to get rid of a 10% uncertainty. If this is the Higgs, then clearly you would do it immediately, but for this case, it needs a really strong motivation.
One alternative is to show that one of the generators is clearly wrong and use the third generator and the one that you know is really going to be correct, and that difference might be smaller. But
I can tell you why we didn't make that conclusion yet, because if you saw before, the PUSIA, Markov for PUSIA did well on the TT-bar semi-leptonic sample, but on the QCD, the Herwig did much better than the PUSIA. So, of course, this is different stuff, but it's hard to conclude.
For example, and what Marcel's effectively referring to is, you know, we took also SHERPA, also ALPGEN plus PUSIA, and PAUHEC plus PUSIA. In addition to the PAUHEC, in addition to Herwig plus plus and 56, and so I mean, in the end, it takes a bit longer, obviously. But
you didn't.
I mean, hopefully, you try to be a little bit more systematic than voting, but.
But you didn't do that on a similar TT bar sample, right?
No. Because here I think you were saying that this is primarily for the QCD back.
No, this is for the W tagging. How to simulate the signal? That's the question.
Right.
And
the TT bar sample did try a lot of different
things. Oh yeah, yeah, that's also true. For the TT bar, also did this. Not quite that
Yeah, because typically the difficulty is T-bar is huge to simulate.
Right, but then again, you're also not going to have your high PTWs in your data to test against, otherwise you wouldn't be running this analysis. The point I was trying to make is that, and I think the point Marcel was trying to make, is you can also just check in other regions of phase space, you know, similar to the kind of control region, and you say, look, infrared plus plus, models my background well, as you showed earlier, PTS6 doesn't, then try to replace the comparison with PTS6 to something else which models the background somewhat well for your QCD control region, and then use that other thing for your signal sample generation here to estimate the tagging efficiency. That's how we mix it together.
Yeah.
Try to find a reason to throw away the generator you don't like, but hopefully you justify that by saying, "Look, that generator I don't like because of its inability to model X, Y, and, you know, distributions A, B, and C."
The decision to take A and B is ad hoc, right?
So
you could have taken A and C or A and D, and I guess, but the game is you try to find evidence of bad modeling, other analyses, etc. I don't think it has converged enough.
No, it certainly has.
We see much more of these comparison plots in the next years, and then we know which one is good.
I mean, it's a bit tough, right? Because the idea isn't that you add more Monte Carlos and therefore your uncertainty grows. Ideally, the more information you add, the smaller the uncertainty, and so that just means you need to have some rationalization for which pieces of information you add to the equation, basically. And as long as those are well chosen, hopefully your uncertainty shrinks.
This is the game.
Well, as you add more Monte Carlos, you may become aware of issues that you didn't.
But we also know, I think you among others might argue, that there are reasons to think a priori that PITIA6 wouldn't be a great model for some of these observables, and that others might be better.
Just in my experience of what we've been doing on analytic calculations and Monte Carlo comparisons, you see huge differences just between the two showers of PITIA6.
One of them we think is right, not in the sense of the shower is right everywhere, but is doing the right thing. The other one isn't. But we only know which one is right because we have an calculation to back it up.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have something independent.
Mm-hmm.
Just data in some narrow range can be risky. You can trade off two effects. You can trade off sort of mismodeling of the underlying event and pile up with mismodeling the perturbative part, and they can mix up. So,
okay, we'll move on to the results. So with this search, one can set limits on resonances decaying to QWZ and this RS graviton. So here's the limit for the QW resonances, a cross-section limit as a function of resonance mass, which goes like from 1 TeV to up to something like 3 TeV. And in the WTAC spectrum, which goes up to 2 TeV, this basically, this cross-section limit, it can be translated in a limit on the coupling, which defines the width and also the cross-section. And then one can actually compare it to the corresponding semi-leptonic analysis. So this is a semi-leptonic non-boosted analysis, the boosted one. And then these two lines correspond to this WZTAC hadronic search. And this is assuming only Z as a signal state. But actually, this analysis is sensitive to both W and Z because it both falls into the mass window. So if you only assume the Z compared to the other ZZ searches, there's a crossover point where this analysis most sensitive is about 1.5 TeV. If you take into account that the WW analysis are not public, early here, they haven't been done yet. This analysis is the only one which the WW final state. Hadronic TT bar is a very similar story. So set cross-section limits on different widths of resonances, and then there's some crossover point where this fully hadronic boosted final state becomes more sensitive than the semi-leptonic and low boost.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
This is following up on Michael Spinovsky's point. When you reevaluate the limits for the KK gluon, do you really go through and fully simulate that additional sample, or do you just translate the limits based on the width and cross-section?
I mean, translating by the width is not, I mean, you need a single Monte Carlo to get the width, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty sure we should have a single Monte Carlo used for that. I didn't do it, so
but
I have to look
tagging,
it up. But
also, what I mean is also for the tagging efficiency. I mean, you evaluate that you expect the. Do you use the same tagging efficiency for the two? Let's say that.
I have to look up, but I mean, at least for WTAC search, it's clear that you always have a signal simulation for each signal, so that you can evaluate it. For that one, I have to check.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume yes, but
have you run even a different generator?
Yeah, there's a different generator, yeah. I actually had it in my slides, yeah. So there's a generator for that, yeah. Okay. And one more point about this analysis. So that was, it's not only the resonance search, so but we also measure like a quantity like this, how much could the cross-section of the TT bar be enhanced in the region 1 TeV to infinity with respect to the standard model TT bar cross section, and then one can set a limit on that number of 2.6. All right, just, and so everybody can look at high mass models which predict high mass TT bar. That's an outlook on final states. So these are the four which I discussed today. Then the obvious candidates for continuing exploiting the substructures. There's many more, but I guess, doing this WW in a semi-leptonic or ZZ in a semi-leptonic final state boosted is the next step to do. And we're working on this already. And then the next step towards this fully hadronic search is now we have a new particle to actually tag, going to BB bar, or actually photons and taus are also hadronic in the, or go also in jets in the end, so could be included as well. And yeah, this is a famous example which was never done actually, but let's see if it's done this year. Yeah, I don't know if I missed any other models. Yeah. These are the discussion points which I was thinking about, but let's see what we have this afternoon. How to calibrate jet substructure in Monte Carlo? Okay, we've discussed this already a lot. How to validate the PT dependence of jet substructure in real Ws or Z at high PT? What additional signatures could be tackled? That we discussion we had also yesterday. And candidates for new tagging methods, we discussed a lot yesterday, and subjectiveness with the one-pass optimization. It's kind of one of the good single observables. Now we're looking at the energy correlation functions. And then the question is, do we need a different tagger for each kind of signal boosted object, like longitudinal or transverse Ws, Zs, Higgses? Or is a one tagger that can do more than one at the same time, so that we don't have to validate many different things. And yeah, B tagging boosted objects is also something that's always still being studied, but it's not being applied yet.
So you mentioned that you might not want to use mass drop variables, and for some of the things we talked about yesterday in terms of when you're accidentally clustering partons together, you're not getting the whole thing, then the mass drop might not be the best thing to use. How mature are the CMS studies for using either event shapes or, gen shapes or those kinds of?
I mean, we've looked like Atlas at many, many different variables, okay. And I mean, the validation methods will be the same. Okay. Look at the CT-bar sample and see how it works. So. Okay. It's not the big thing to switch to a different tagger. Okay. It's just a matter, yeah, because we know how to validate it. But, I don't know if it's going to be in a week or in 2 months, but you will see something.
So if you go early on to the So the signal spectrum for your single tag has this often observed low tail to low diget masses, but it actually looks very good for the double tag.
Yeah, that's actually an effect because when you cut on this W mass at 70 GV, you cut away the low tail of the W mass peak. Mm-hmm. Because this tagger is so tight, it happens to also cut away this radiation thing, which kind of causes tail. It's more, I think, a coincidence. We didn't make it for that purpose, but yeah, apparently it does.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess the direction I was going was that you know, there are cases in particular with hard cuts on the tagger where maybe you're losing some information from the original kinematics, right? Where there are cases where you effectively have some hard wide angle emission that your tagger actually cuts out because it's really attempting to reconstruct the mass of that W very well. Or in some other case, for example, a top tagger, you know, this is often the case where you have a very large cone to begin with. But what you really want, this is something Gavin brought up the other day, which is that you often want the actual kinematics of the parton as it was sort of emitted from your heavy particle. So I wonder if, I mean, we see this sort of distribution in lots of things. I mean, this is in the Atlas searches. Marcel showed an example yesterday where overlaid with several examples of this, especially for very, very high mass resonances.
Mm.
there's two things that can happen. One is that your resonance shape, line shape, can genuinely be like that, which is if you've got a resonance with a finite width, a non-negligible width, just because PDFs cause you sort of, PDFs are much larger, PDF luminosity is much larger at smaller masses. So you start off with a symmetric peak. But then PDF FFX cause the left-hand edge to be blown up. So that's just, I mean, that's independent of any reconstruction. If you just saw your X, whatever it is, if the X has a sort of certain width, then you will always see that structure. So there's always a question in this kind of plot, when you see the kind of differences, what are the widths of the things you're looking for? The second thing that happens is that a difference between the two cases is not so much what you do to the W side, but it's what you do to the fork side and the top plot. Because the radius of the jet finding is pretty small, 0.5. And you know that when you do digest searches, so for example in CMS, you have a radiation recovery thing by looking for a third jet somewhere in the vicinity of one of the two main jets.
Right. And this is the case I was more referring to, where you effectively made a mistake in some sense of the word in the reconstruction. And it's so exactly going in the direction of the recovery approach.
So for the quark side of this particular thing, you could do the recovery again.
Or use a larger radius jet. I mean, you know, actually, I point people to your interactive website all the time, where it's like, well, go play with this and prove to yourself that maybe you could actually use a better jet algorithm.
Yeah. But I mean, what we went in CMS, we started with the AK5, then AK7. Uh-huh. Or actually, we started with AK7,
okay.
I think. And then we showed that with the AK5 with recovering stuff, it's better sensitivity than with AK7. Okay, but you can go to the larger cone from the beginning.
And if you go to the website, you also have the option of running filtering on your AK 0.7. And that does better filtering, which is essentially equivalent to sort of taking 2.5 jets.
Yeah.
So.
I believe that, yeah.
And this actually also feeds back into the discussion from yesterday about, you know, other signals, et cetera. I mean, this is going to be even more dramatic in the case of a gluon resonance or something else that's very bizarre. I mean, in particular, you listed in the end, you know, a couple of additional examples, and you know, and we know for that you know, a heavy flavor resonance is going to look at least a little bit different, maybe not in the limit of extremely high. And it just might be very useful to maintain, you know, this awareness. Of the ability, you know, you do have the anti-KT7 jets, you know, how might this look with a different algorithm? At least that's something that we're trying to push for in Atlas. You know, we really have in the end tuples multiple jet algorithms, just give it a shot at some point in your analysis optimization procedure.
Yeah. Actually, there's activity in CMS to have more than the two jet cones now, so that we can go even larger jets.
Yeah.
Without customly checking every single calibration, but having it for the whole calibration.
Mm-hmm. You get the same jet energy scale uncertainty as on the larger jet?
And not now, but that's what we
request
as the substructure people request from the. Actually, many of the substructure people now enter the jet group or are becoming heads of the jet group, so that's how it can happen. Yeah.
Do you happen to know how the PDF uncertainty was estimated for the TD bar search?
No, with detail, I don't know.
Because
I have to look it up.
Because this uncertainty basically prevented us from showing limits for the mass points above 2 TeV, and you showed these mass points. So.
Yeah, I don't know that.
I got one, maybe it's more general to everybody in the room, not just to you. But so there's certainly the most mature jet substructure searches are things like this, you know, known standard model resonances being produced in pairs or something like a boosted Higgs search. There's this other family that certainly theorists here have been talking about, including Jay's talk, of sort of using jet substructure very inclusively as just a handle on bizarre things with high jet multiplicity, for example. So I'm curious to know where that is on the radar of experimentalists. Obviously, the validation is a totally different story, maybe very difficult, but
I mean,
where is it on the horizon?
I mean, just now people are starting to think about doing this analysis, or new grad students starting with this kind of analysis.
We'll actually have a version of this coming out very soon.
But it's a multi-jet search and using some of it. It's not
yet.
Right.
It's not
using
full blown.
Right, substructure as an event to really get rid of net altogether, right? This is now it's hybrid between ETMIS and JET substructure, but I think we'll have an analysis if we manage to work out ways to get the background, some of the control on that.
Yeah, it's really the background.
Really only on
the
right.
Problem. I mean, you know, it's easy to make the signal plots, obviously.
Right.
So it's a lot harder, and in particular, this came up a little bit in the discussion during Andrea's talk. I mean, it's the definitions of the control regions are often very tricky because some of these signals are so ubiquitous, in fact, that it's really hard to define a non-contaminated control region. That ends up being, I would almost say, probably the primary struggle. It's, you know, and exactly as Gregor pointed out, I mean, it's, you know, even when you have 16 control regions, you know, it may very well be that 14 of them have a lot of signal in them as well. So that ends up being really a really big struggle. And then, of course, finding one that simultaneously has little contamination and says something about your signal region.
Right.
Hmm.
That's an interesting.